My name is Jonathan Douglas Duran, and this is an interview with filmmaker Alex Monti Kanawati. We will be discussing his most recent film, Return to Babylon. First off, Monty, thank you for finding some time to be interviewed. Thank you for doing this.
Sure, no problem, Jonathan.
So then, this new film of yours, Return to Babylon, is based off of a short film that you had made back in 2001 called Birth of Babylon. Is that correct? Okay, so is Return to Babylon a remake or is it an entirely new project just based off of the same concept?
Same genre and the same style. The Birth of Babylon is a short one-reeler, as we're popular in the day, and it's about the true story of the still unsolved murder of William Desmond Taylor, the infamous director of the time. So The Birth of Babylon would go on to win the grand prize at the Los Angeles Film Festival, and a huge party was thrown for me, and there I would meet Maria Conchita Alonso, who was very impressed with Birth of Babylon and the William Desmond Taylor murder. And she strongly wanted to do a silent movie herself. So that started Return to Babylon, in essence. The Birth of Babylon, the William Desmond Taylor story, is incorporated in Return to Babylon.
Interesting. Now, anytime I hear the words Babylon and it has to do with films, I immediately think of Kenneth Anger's Hollywood Babylon books. So, were those an inspiration for these projects at all?
Research on these projects, yes.
Okay. So, of course, you have the Fatty Arbuckle scandal. What smaller, more innocuous events, though, did you choose to portray in this film that people?
Drug overdoses at age 26 and 29, respectively. So I chose to do the Barbara Lamar and the Alma Rubens tragedies.
What are a few events that you'd have loved to retell if you had been afforded the money and the time to do so?
I think I cut corners on the Rudy Valentino segment because a lot of his period films were lavish costume dramas. And that's when we started getting to a lot of expense on the costumes.
Right.
So I would have loved to enhance his segment.
Now, who plays Rudy Valentino in the film, by the way?
Actually, I do.
Oh. How did that come about? Did you have that envisioned from the beginning, or was that a Interesting. So you shot this film in 2004, yet still now in 2008, it has yet to be released due to financing issues. Is this correct?
shorts that I started back actually in 2000 and 2001, and we started shooting into 2003, and I decided to string them along and make Return to Babylon. Financing was a big issue because money just trickles in, and post-production is expensive. But I'm planning on having the film debut at the Toronto Film Festival this year.
Fantastic.
Hopefully we'll get accepted.
This reminds me of recently reading about a struggle that another director, David Lynch, had trying to get his movie Inland Empire made, where he basically had made shorts throughout the years and could never get a financer to put the film together for him. He ended up going through a French distributor. Have you looked into any international distribution sources at all? So what exactly is left to do on the film now? Have you done final cut? Is scoring completed? Excellent. So I assume that there's, talking about cost and getting into the lavish pieces. I'm assuming that there are no recreations of magnificently opulent Stroheim orgies in the film. Is that
There's
safe
one
to assume?
character that is inspired by the von Stroheim orgies. I mean, obviously, the more people you have, the more people you have to make up, the more people you have to dress.
Right.
So things have to be limited in terms of size. But I did still manage to get some pretty good parties on there with a good sized cast.
So you have some of the Stroheim story in there. And I'm assuming there's no renditions of the court lazily reading from Mary Astor's diary. You know, did you kind of shy away from these the polar opposites, the extreme bombast and the extreme subtlety for reasons of tone to keep the film more cohesive? Or was it just purely economical and logistical?
Until you had just mentioned that.
Oh, interesting. It was a fairly boring story, so that's why I was wondering if it had been put in there. I read it in one of the Hollywood Babylon books. So. Did the aesthetic of the film itself, meaning, you know, how it's technically speaking, how it emulates the time period in which the events would have occurred, it's silent, it's black and white, grainy. There's an overall distressed quality to the image itself. Did that help you as a director any? I mean, was it perhaps easier or even just more freeing to know that things didn't have to come out technically perfect by today's standards? And did it provide you more leeway, more creative license during the editing process?
Creative. What was interesting enough is that the camera would jam, and that would create some edits that were unintentional that everyone thought was intentional. So yes, the distressed feel and the shaky camera was something we were going for, and definitely it was a big relief to have that we didn't have to get it technically perfect.
Yeah. Now, in my experience, each time that I've ever made a film, when it's all over and done with, I usually have something exponentially different than what I had originally set out to create. Perhaps not meaning a literal deviation from the script per se, but just that the image I had in my mind of what the film was going to be, what it meant, had changed along the way. It naturally evolved into something much different. Does this happen to you as a filmmaker, and did it occur to you while you were making this film?
Grandiose than I ever imagined it to be. I didn't realize someone even called it a mini epic the other day. I mean, it definitely was different than what I had envisioned, yes.
Now, if I can change gears here, and if I can say this without sounding as if I'm fawning or anything, but I think you have an extraordinary cast in this film. You have actors that include people such as Tippi Hedren, Jennifer Tilly, Laura Herring, Maria Conchita Alonso, Debbie Mazar, Ione Skye, among many other people. With all these names attached, how is it that proper funding is still unattained? I mean, that seems insane to me that
You
somebody's
know
not.
what, Jonathan? Funding is always very elusive. I mean, I knew a pretty prominent director with very big stars attached, much bigger and more bankable than the ones I have. And he had trouble funding. You have to remember that The Departed took 6.5 years to make. And that's with Nicholson and Wahlberg and DiCaprio and Scorsese attached.
That's a sad reality of the film business. So talk to me about a few of the actors in your film, the parts they play, how you got them for the role, and what it was like to work with them.
She plays Lupa Velez, the Mexican Spitfire. She came on board and she would bring on Jennifer Tilly, who she introduced me to, who would play Clara Bow, the It Girl. We have two high energy people there. Ione Skye was a lot more reserved. I was introduced to her through a friend, and it was Ione Skye and Maria that we started shooting with first. Jennifer came on later. Rolanda Watts would come on as a friend of mine introduced me to her. She plays Josephine Baker, another high energy person. And more subdued was Debbie Mazar, who Maria Conchita Alonso brought on board. It was definitely a team effort. And Laura Herring was also brought on by Maria Conchita Alonso, who has a small part in the film as a tango dancer.
And what about Miss Tippi Hedren?
She knew about the film and called me and asked me for a role, so I specifically wrote the part of Miss Peabody in specifically in mind with her.
Well, that's must be fairly flattering considering she's worked with Chaplin and Hitchcock, and I mean
Exactly,
to
there's
have
the
her
whole
calling.
Charlie connection of Charlie Chaplin.
Right, yeah, I mean that would be quite a feather in your cap, I would assume, to have an actress that's worked with such great directors give you a call
Exactly.
and say, I want to work with you. I mean, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And I mean, that's just a phenomenal cast, in my opinion. I mean, everybody that you've mentioned, with the exception of Rolanda Watts, who I haven't seen anything except your film, I've seen in, everybody else I've seen in many other films, and they've always been fantastic standout performances they've given. And the film, carries on that tradition. There's a lot of fantastic performances by these great actors. And you're welcome. And it also introduced me to new people like Rolanda Watts, who was absolutely fantastic in the film as
Doesn't she
Josephine
do a great
Baker.
job as Josephine Baker?
Yeah, she's absolutely fantastic. I mean, very, very well played by her there. Did you shoot this film on set, on locations? Where was it filmed?
It was shot in throughout Los Angeles, and we shot at the silent movie star homes of Rudy Valentino, Antonio Moreno, Norma Talmadge. We also shot at the estate of Ruby Keeler, who is famous for 42nd Street.
And was this difficult to get into those places, or was it
Actually, it all just fell into my lap.
really? That's very
We also
nice.
shot on the same ship, the Queen Mary.
The haunted Queen Mary ship?
Right. I was invited to do an event there in December, because for some other haunted paranormal aspect of the movie.
Really, that'd be very interesting. Did you when you were in the Valentino Mansion, did you were those the scenes that you played Rudy in?
Shot the Fatty Arbuckle segment at the Rudy Valentino house. The Rudy Valentino segment would be shot in other parts of the city.
Interesting. So what are a few of your favorite films? We've been, talking about actors and financing and all this sort of thing, but what are some influences for you?
Notorious. I'm also a big Pedro Almodóvar fan. I like Matador, his movie Matador. I'm a big silent movie fan. I like the films of Eric von Stroheim, T.W. Griffith. It depends on the decade, and I can tell you, I can get into more specifics. But I like psychological thrillers, and I also like camp movies. On the more modern side of things, I really like the movie Grease. I like Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, the Roger Ebert film.
Right. have you seen any good movies recently? Okay. Let's stop. What's that? There. I've seen a few, so I can vouch for that. They are out there somewhere. So you shot this film on what type of film did you shoot this on? Of course, yeah. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the very beginning of how this film came about for you?
Well, I was walking down Hollywood Boulevard with one of the producers who would come on board as producer, and it started the birth of Babylon was when we found a bag of factory sealed film on Hollywood Boulevard, and there were 19 rolls, and that's what would become the birth of Babylon. So in essence, Return of Babylon and Birth of Babylon started when we found factory sealed film.
Wow.
Talk about synchronicity.
No kidding. So you found some black and white film while you were discussing making a movie, that would require such a, look. Did anything else extremely coincidental or odd occur during pre-production?
Pennies for money, and it was just incredible.
So pre-production's a breeze, that gets finished and shooting
Right.
begins. So how do things go on the set and on locations?
Do you ever too definitely notice the phenomenon that there were ghosts on the set, which turned out to be true? I mean, she really was vocal about ghosts on the set. And there was some paranormal activity also captured on the still frames of the still photographer.
What was she saying? I mean, how did she broach
She
the
was saying
subject?
that they were touching her, that they were, she could feel their presence, they were all over her. And it did turn out indeed that in her footage, there was a lot of paranormal activity. They were all over her.
Let's really delve into this, the supernatural aspects of the film then. We've kind of sidestepped the issue so far talking about the film side of it. But you do believe that there is a supernatural aspect to this film, correct?
There is no question in my mind, because I had the film studied at Brooks Institute of Photography here in Santa Barbara, California, and we studied the film frame by frame with one of the photography staff members, and we deduced that there was morphing going on, and morphing is a very costly, expensive project, procedure that does not happen spontaneously, as far as we know. But people morph frame by frame into Christ-like images, biblical characters, or monstrosities.
That's interesting. It's interesting that not only ostensibly that all of this really occurs, just while you're filming. I mean, did you notice it while you were filming, or only when you went
No,
back and?
no. I didn't even notice it watching the dailies a lot until Dean, the cinematography teacher at Brooks Institute, he had an eye for studying the footage, and he kept asking me whether special effects had taken place, and I said no. Then we started slowing the film down and watching them frame by frame, and that's when we really saw them.
Wow. Now I've seen an early cut of the film, and most of the instances where these supernatural, what you might call morphing effects, occur in the finale of the film. Did
Right.
you consciously put those at the end of the film? During editing for aesthetic reasons, or were those scenes that they occurred and always intended to just be at the end of the film, and they happened to be the ones that had supernatural aspects to them?
I wanted to tell the story that I originally wanted to tell to keep it separate. That's why I put all the anomalies at the end of the film to kind of give them their own segment. And then it could be served as an overview of the film to give you this theme of things aren't what they seem.
So, of course, many people are going to view the footage and the information very skeptically and say that it's a gimmick or a hoax. So try to address those folks. Let's talk about your painstaking efforts to have the film examined and verified as genuine paranormal phenomenon. You didn't just jump the gun and proclaim these images and events to be, extraordinary paranormal. You decided to have expert opinions, second opinions, and more, even at the expense of holding up the release of the film solely because you yourself were so flabbergasted at the images you were seeing. Is that right?
Right, that's exactly right.
So it's not like, you actually did have professionals study the film more than once, and everybody seemed to agree that there was something, that had untampered had occurred in the film.
Pardon me, what was the question now?
I was just saying, so you had experts examine the film,
I had
and they
numerous
all
people look
agreed.
at it.
You had who?
Numerous lighting people, because I wanted to know whether this was a phenomenon that was something that had been seen before. I mean, I went to USC Film School, and I don't remember a class in which the film animated itself. So I wanted to, like, really know for sure, what I was seeing was something new and still undefined.
So all of the morphing effects and all of the ghost Christ-like images, are found on the original negatives. Is that correct?
Right.
Of course, I think it goes without saying that you yourself are truly amazed and shocked by what you've managed to capture on film. I mean, is that a safe assumption to make?
Pardon?
I was just saying, it would seem to me that you yourself would be truly amazed and truly shocked by what you managed to capture on film. I mean, is that? Yeah.
Certainly, I would not have directed them if they looked like anything like they did on film footage. I would be too afraid to get near them. Besides, what would you feed them at lunch?
These are all questions that have plagued humanity. I don't know how to answer them. So you had all these qualified experts examine the film, and still their conclusion was that the phenomenon which occurs in the film is truly unexplainable. So then, what is it that you attribute it to? I mean, do you what's your honest explanation for what we are seeing in these or in the controversial closing sequence of the film? What's your what do you what do you attribute it to? What is your honest explanation for what we see during the closing sequence? So I mean, this brings up a lot of interesting, very, very interesting questions. And I mean, it's very strange. There's a huge, history of, for lack of a better word, haunted objects. I mean, from the beginning of recorded human history, ancient Egyptians, knights, church officials, they all subscribe at one time or another to the belief that objects can contain other forms of energy, stains, echoes, traces, things like that. People do believe that somehow energy becomes attached to or within physical material, much the same way people often regard houses as haunted. So do you subscribe to this idea? Do you believe in ghosts, or do you think that this is some sort of religious phenomenon? Okay, but is it a specifically theological occurrence? Is it a monotheistic Judeo-Christian type of an occurrence, or is it just some sort of a spirit?
That's a very good question. I think it's too premature to tell. I know that there's a lot of Christ-like images represented in the film, and I think he has something to do with it. I really do. I mean, there's a small part of me that thinks that this could be a foreshadowing of the second coming. I mean, a lot of these characters reflect what is characterized in Revelations, half man, half demon, half animal. And that's what strikes me as interesting.
Is very, very interesting, and I mean,
You
as you
know what I'm
said,
saying?
yeah, as you said, it's very, I don't think. I can say for sure. I mean, it's
I
definitely
think
a very
it's too complex, and I think we still need more people to study the film.
Exactly, yes. Which is why I think distribution is very important. You need to get as many people as possible to see this, so that discussion can be opened up and people can really look at it, and hopefully somebody will have an idea or perhaps an explanation. Who knows? Do you have any closing comments, Monty?
Do hope that everybody gets a chance to, who wants to see the film, gets a chance to see the film, and I'm really yearning to have a solid distribution on this.
Oh. And when is the Toronto Film Festival? When will you
It's
know
in
if the
September,
film?
and they'll let us know in mid-August.
In August, okay. And I suppose that'll be on various websites announcing when it will be shown, if it will be shown, and distribution. I mean, updates will be provided through your various websites, correct?
They will be.
Right. Well, we've got all the links and pictures and discussion boards and everything for people to go to here to look at the film and start talking about it. So they will be definitely looking for updates and news on it. So thank you for doing this, Monty. It was very interesting talking to you, and hope to do it again.
Likewise.
All right. Okay, let's take a little